On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Here's the word on the street, Wall Street, Main Street, maybe your street. The honeymoon is over for Federal Reserve Chief Ben Bernanke, and the wedding crasher is inflation. Consumer prices for the first 5 months of this year are pumping ahead at a 5.2% annual rate, compared with 3.4% for all of last year. Inflation phobics are raising alarm bells, pointing back to the inflation-plagued 1970s, when consumer prices spiked by more than 13% in a single year, and mortgages were in the high teens. Some are calling that fear unhinged, but consumers looking at flat wages and spiking prices are worried. Up next on Point, the inflation threat and what it means for you and your finances. We're going to hear perspectives from top economists this hour on the inflation threat and its implications, but we begin in Washington with the latest numbers and Federal Reserve Bank Chief Ben Bernanke's strategy for pushing back inflation. Christopher Swan is U.S. economics correspondent for the Financial Times. Christopher, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi there, Tom. My pleasure.
So take us in here. Why are people suddenly so flustered about inflation?
Well, I think really what it is we've had 3 months now where the core rate of inflation has been above expectations. There are really two rates of inflation that people look at. One is the headline one, which includes the energy prices and the food prices.
And that's the 5.2% annual rate it's clicking along at that we mentioned earlier, but core is lower.
Core is lower, but at 0.3% on the month for the past 3 months. That's much higher than people had been hoping for. I think the Fed seems to be happy with an annual inflation rate on the core level of up to about 2%. We're now sort of creeping up to 2.3 to 2.4%. So there's no particular reason to panic just yet, but it's certainly edging up and moving in the wrong direction.
What is driving inflation? I mean, we know about gas prices, but core inflation excludes that. So what's driving inflation up by this titch at the moment?
Well, it's a bit of a mystery, really, but the part of the index that really rose fairly steeply last month was rental prices. And this is a hideously complex area that I always particularly dislike writing about. But
rents, like renting an apartment, a house.
Yeah, essentially what the statisticians do is they have two measures of rent. One is the rent that people actually pay, and then another is a rather cryptic measure called owner's equivalent rent, where they basically assess what people would be getting in income if they actually rented out their houses. And that's actually been rising very quickly indeed. That was up 0.6% last month. Now, it's a measure that people actually don't actually pay. People don't pay to sort of rent out the houses that they own. But it plays a very big part indeed in the inflation figures. In fact, it's about a quarter of the overall index.
Christopher, let me ask you, the Fed has now raised interest rates something like 16 times in a row, going on 17.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be the antidote to inflation, isn't it? You crank interest rates up a little bit and it cranks inflation down or holds it at bay. Is that not working?
Yeah, part of the problem, I think, is that with the U.S., The mechanism that often works in the United Kingdom, for example, is when the Bank of England, for example, puts up interest rates, it increases people's mortgage payments fairly immediately.
Right.
And that clamps down their spending power. In the United States, about three quarters of people have fixed rate mortgages. So their mortgage is fixed for 30 years.
So fairly protected from that.
They're well insulated. And many other people have mortgages that are tied to the 10-year bond.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're fairly insulated as well. Now, the yield on the 10-year bond only really starts to go up if people are expecting inflationary pressures in the future. So insofar as people think that the Fed has a good control over inflation, these yields, which are very important for the U.S. economy, these longer-term rates, haven't been going up quite as quickly. So to some extent, the Fed has been a victim of its own inflation-fighting success, really.
Why is the stock market responding so nervously, I guess in no small part, to these inflation numbers and the Fed's response, Ben Bernanke's comments and response? The market done a lot of dropping lately. Why? What's the connection?
Well, I think that the financial markets are worried about the possibility of overkill. The Fed faces a very delicate balance here. On the one hand, they don't want to allow inflation to get out of control. On the other hand, the economy has already started to slow. And the expectation is that whilst this won't show up in the inflation figures for quite a while to come, that eventually it will dampen down inflationary pressures. So the danger, of course, is that the Fed tightens rates too much and slows down the economy.
Now, we've also seen, I mean, as I understand it, there's an annualized rate for core inflation of above 3% now.
Above 2%.
Oh, I'm looking here. It's a 3.1% pace this year, prices excluding food and energy. I mean, I realize there's many ways of slicing this. We may be talking about two different things.
Yeah.
But I'm seeing one reference here that says, you know, that Alan Greenspan had this current rate of inflation many times during his 18 years at the Feds. And people, I don't recall them panicking, but getting as flustered as they are right now. What's the difference?
Well, I think people have got a little spoiled by very, very low levels of inflation. We haven't had a huge amount of pass-through from the energy prices. There are just a whole host of different measures of inflation there. One measure that the Federal Reserve has been looking at, which I think you might be referring to, is the 3-month annualized rate of core inflation, which has gone up to 3.8%.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that I think Ben Bernanke feels adequately smooths out all of these volatile elements to the index. I think that people can go over the top about this. I mean, there are two problems with inflation. One is that, of course, it's eroding American standard of living. Wage rises have not really been keeping pace with the rate of inflation if you take energy into account.
Right.
The other is the fear that if inflation starts to creep up on a core level, that is, if these energy prices start to feed through, if rents continue to rise, and I think there's every reason to expect that they will, because so many people are being priced out of the housing market and as it were, locked into the rental sector.
Right.
That once you get inflation underway, it's much, much harder to clamp down on. It's much better to take preemptive action, stop the problem at its source, rather than wait until inflation starts to gallop out of control and it feeds through into wage increases, and then inflationary expectations start to gather pace. And once people expect inflation, they start to demand higher wages, and a whole train of events are set in motion.
And you get stuck in that kind of inflation circle that nobody wants to be back in, that we haven't been in for a long time. Christopher Swan with the Financial Times in Washington, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm joined right now in the studio in Boston by Alan Sinai, Chief Global Economist and Strategist at Decision Economics, a finance and economics advisory firm. Alan Sinai, it's always great talking with you. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Nice to see you, Tom.
So here we are, inflation, people running in circles about it. I think for many consumers, if you take out gasoline and you take out groceries, I don't know if people are feeling it acutely yet or not, but clearly the stock market is responding like crazy. Ben Bernanke is taking brickbats over it. Has it reached a level at which we should be worried about it? Are we getting close to this point, Christopher Swan describes, where inflationary expectations begin to click in and we're all stuck in some kind of inflation spiral?
You know, unfortunately, we consumers pay those energy and food prices. So from the point of view of our purchasing power, we are being hurt, not just by the inflation that's occurring when you take out energy and food, but by the overall rate of inflation, which is running about 4% right now, year over year. It's hurting purchasing power. From the point of view of the Federal Reserve, they have been taking those elements out because they're so volatile. Energy and food are so volatile, and they go up, they go down, those prices. So they don't want to make a mistake in monetary policy on volatile elements.
So for the consumer, they're pretty fundamental to the
Absolutely
monthly budget.
Fundamental.
For the Fed, it's a little different.
Yeah, for the Fed. So the Fed looks ex food and energy, and that rate is above their threshold tolerance at this time, which is a lot lower than it has been historically and a lot lower than it was under Chairman Greenspan, at least at the beginning. It's now a desired range of 1 to 2% on the core rate. Why do they want it so low? To avoid it getting high. If you keep it low and keep it stable, then you never get into a big problem. We're kind of out of bounds right now from their point of view.
But you've got people in the business world upset about it. Here's Forbes magazine saying, hey, you know, watch out. If this gets going, it gallops, and we got to get a handle on this right now. I'm reading a Fed member saying there's some unhinged commentary about the inflation at the moment. So for consumers, should they be worried or not?
Yes, they should be worried because they're getting hit by high and rising prices. Second, the central bank is going to raise rates to take that inflation down. It takes quite a while to get the inflation down. Once it's up, it's already up, and we're going to face higher interest rates as consumers and borrowers, and we will be hit two ways, higher inflation and higher interest rates.
I thought that low prices, let's say, for products manufactured in China were going to protect us from inflation for years and years and years. Our, you know, clothing and everything we buy from China would be so cheap that that would be a damper on inflation. We didn't have to worry about it. In fact, deflation was the word of fear not that long ago.
We have cycles. Inflation rises, inflation falls, and now it's rising. And the commodity prices you're talking about, like the flat screens, the electronics, the computers, those prices are going down. It's services prices, which are 60% of our major indices, that are going up. Indeed, what was disturbing in last week's CPI was that services ex-energy inflation is running at about 4+% year over year. And that's a lot of stuff, education, tuition, health care. It's transportation services, it's personal services, it's eating out at restaurants. A wide range of prices are rising at an inflation rate that is unacceptable to the Federal Reserve at this point, and that is getting punitive to American consumers.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the inflation threat, how serious, how real, what it could mean for you and your finances. President Bush was talking about inflation last week in the Rose Garden, facing questions about whether inflation might derail a U.S. economic expansion.
Obviously, the Fed is watching the signals for inflation very carefully. They'll make decisions independent of the White House. On fiscal policy, though, I would strongly urge the Congress to recognize why we have grown the way we have grown, why we've got strong economic growth in the first quarter of this year, why we've added over 5 million new jobs in two and three quarters years, and that's because the tax cuts are working, and they need to make the tax cuts permanent. Pro-growth economic policies work.
There's the president's view of the world right now from New York. Ian Morris, chief U.S. economist at HSBC. Mr. Morris, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
What do you make of the kerfuffle over inflation?
Well, we're experiencing some cyclical upward drift in core inflation. That is inflation excluding food and energy, which tend to be volatile items. So you strip out the volatile stuff and you want to look at what's happening underneath the surface. And the underlying trend is up a little bit. Back in 2003, we were worried that inflation would go too low. Now we're at the part of the cycle where the economy is closer to full employment. We have a very low unemployment rate. So there's more risk now that if we continue to experience a reasonably robust expansion, that we're going to start hitting some capacity constraints, both in the labor market as well as in product markets. And that just might convince firms to start raising their prices, and we're now at an inflation rate in underlying terms, which is a little bit higher than where the Fed wants it. So nothing to panic about at right now, and certainly financial markets, although stocks have got hit recently, long-term interest rates are still reasonably low. So there's no huge inflation threat like the 1970s, but it's something the Fed wants to keep an eye on. And as a result, it's probably going to keep raising interest rates at least once more at the end of June and maybe again in August.
Ian Morris, explain the clubhouse chatter then for us here. If Greenspan saw inflation at this rate any number of times, I don't recall all this hearkening back to the 1970s and kind of the fear talk, you know, might we be in Volcker's position again? Are we going to see 13 and 14% inflation again? Why have the 70s come back? Why is the heat of the conversation higher than it's been recently? Is it just because Ben Bernanke's new and untested and people don't know if he can whack it down?
I think the comparisons to the 1970s is really due to gasoline prices. You know, gasoline prices are very high. People feel that immediately. They see that, and it's the talk of the town when it comes to inflation. But generally speaking, if you strip that out, we're nowhere near the 1970s, and no one really expects us to return to the 1970s.
Alan Sinai, what tips it? What determines? I mean, Bernanke said he's willing to continue raising interest rates. So is there any question that this can be controlled? Can it get out of hand somehow? What's a scenario in which that might happen if he's ready to keep on hiking rates?
Well, historically, except for the 1990s that you've mentioned in the Greenspan years, that's exactly what happens in business cycle expansions. Inflation, whatever the threshold rate is for a central bank at the time, inflation gets out of quote-unquote control. They have to raise interest rates higher than they ever think, which indeed our Federal Reserve is now in territory they didn't expect to be. The availability of money gets cramped and the economy gets weaker, and that's how inflation comes down. I don't know that we're going to have anything different this time. It's just a milder version of that. In the 90s...
Does that mean we've lost the Greenspan magic? Wasn't that what he was hailed for? Is that he managed to keep it all going forward?
He was a little bit lucky in the 90s because, remember, we were cutting government spending, and that was taking demand down. We were getting out of the Cold War, and that was very deflationary.
Mm-hmm.
Price inflation was coming down. We had that momentum. Oil prices were not rising. They've been going up now for 4 years, and energy costs up for 4 years. They were coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the productivity, positive productivity gains in the mid-90s to the end of the 90s, a huge increase in productivity,
right,
which took inflation way, way down. So it was quite a nice environment to operate in when you're head of the central bank. What we're in now is very much more like traditional cycles, and inflation has gotten ahead of the Federal Reserve. And once that happens, it's very tough to catch up. Generally, interest rates have to go higher than most of us expect.
So high that we are going to be risking or headed for a recession? Is that what it's going to take?
We're going to slow down over the next year or two. I think we can avoid a full-fledged recession. It's hard to get us to have a recession these days in the kind of economy we have. But no, all of us are going to end up one way or the other having to cut back.
Ian Morris, what about working Americans impatient with the pace of their wage rises or lack thereof in recent years? Gas and groceries and everything else ticks up a little bit here. Are they going to see higher wages as a result?
Well, it's something the Fed kind of expects going forward. If you like, the labor share of the economic pie is actually very low from an historical perspective. And on the other side of the coin, the profit share of the economic pie is virtually at an all-time high in after-tax terms.
That is, corporate profits very high, labor's piece of the pie
very low. Mm-hmm. That's right. And so the Fed's expecting some reversal of that trend. So if we do get unexpectedly big rises in wages, then the Fed might actually let that run a little bit and look at it as not particularly inflationary, as long as corporate America decides to lower profit margins as opposed to raise prices. But they need to be very careful, given that the economy is pretty much running at full capacity. Now, what seems to be going on is that the top 20% of income earners are getting decent wage hikes, but the bottom 80% isn't. And especially in real terms, the bottom 80% have actually seen some decline because in inflation-adjusted terms, our purchasing power has been eaten away by high energy prices. So that influence is still there.
And no small – 80% is a pretty big number.
Well, it is, and it's also one of the reasons why despite the fact that we have a very, very low unemployment rate, down to 4.6%, which is a new cycle low and should be very, very good news, people somehow don't feel as confident as you normally would with a 4.6 unemployment rate.
And well, maybe your 80% not keeping up is a big part of the reason why. I want to turn to the people, if I may. Ian, Alan Sina, we've got a lot of listeners who want to join us. Judy is calling from Canton, Connecticut. Hi, Judy. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
There's always a kind of disconnect between the people out in the world and economists, because really since 2001, my family's wages have felt like they were shrinking. And we are, if statistically speaking, we are in the top 20%. And, you know, I can't, my grocery bill has doubled, gases are going up. Every time my husband gets a raise, it gets eaten up by our health care costs. So, you know, up until now, when people, economists talk about, there's been no inflation, and they leave out those core numbers, you know, as a regular consumer, you want to scream.
Because to you, it feels like it's been there and been there for a while now. Alan, Judy, thank you very much for your call. Alan, what about this, the consumer impression of what's
Judy
going on?
Judy has it exactly right. Exactly right. Now, there are some economists with whom there is not a disconnect. This is a classic inflation process. We've seen it many times in the past. And it did begin at about the time that the caller mentioned.
So well before the gasoline price spike of the last...
Oil and energy prices began to go up in November of 2001. We're at $19 a barrel of crude oil. We've been going for 4 years. So from where we were, which were very low prices, an overhang of the weakness of 2000-2001, we began to go up. And she's got it exactly right anecdotally. And indeed, I think our Federal Reserve has been making a mistake in X-ing out energy and are coming to the game too late. So inflation has escaped enough, so the economy will have to suffer pain.
It's out of the barn. Off we go. It's going to get worse for Judy.
I think, I think the interest rates will go up, which will make it a little more painful. I think the inflation genie has one hand and one leg out of the bottle. And the hope is we can get that hand and leg back in the bottle without the genie getting totally out.
Ian Morris, what if we don't? If the genie gets out, what does that mean for retirement savings? What does that mean for housing? And do we have sort of personal and public agendas in conflict here? Might the federal government like to see a little bit of inflation to sort of whack away at the real cost of that huge deficit that we're running?
Right. All those influences, if the inflation genie were to get out, and it's not something I really expect to get out of hand, you know, like 5 or 6% inflation, I think we might go from 2 to 3% inflation, but not to 5 or 6 or 7. But if we were to get that type of higher inflation, then you would see long-term interest rates in particular skyrocket. You would see the Fed funds rate go up a lot more than where it is now at 5%. It would probably have to go to 8, 9, or 10%, and then you're sort of looking at a late 1980s type of situation. And the impact that will have on asset prices, whether it's stocks or houses, would be very bad news. And as a result, you'd get a lot of wealth in real terms being evaporated, and it would probably send the economy into a deep recession. So we need to keep the inflation genie in check. We need to keep inflation relatively low. And you know, your caller just highlighted how all of her items are going through the roof. What we want to make sure, if nominal wages aren't rising all that much, if medical and education costs are going through the roof, what we don't want to do is exacerbate the problem for the average family by raising your interest costs as well. So what we really need to watch to see if inflation does go through the roof is whether wages start rising at 7 or 8%. And I don't think it's going to do that. I think it's just going to rise at 3.5% to 4.5%, maybe 5%. And as long as it's there, then the chances of 1970s inflation is very low.
Alan Sinai, 2 to 3% inflation maybe, but 5, 6, 7, don't worry about it, says Ian Morris. We're not going there, are you?
No, that's way too high. This is a cyclical, classic inflationary pickup. It's mild in form compared to the late 60s, 70s, and 80s. Mm-hmm. We'll get, I think, similar kinds of qualitative reactions, which include a much slower economy and you and I having to cut back. We're going to have to cut back.
In our personal budgets.
Yes. As part of the process, it always happens. We'll have to cut back. But I don't think a disaster is looming of the sort of the 70s. No, that's not at all what we're looking at or for.
That's good news, but not exactly
not totally
rosy news. David's calling from Washington, D.C. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Yes. Somewhat similar to the previous caller, 5% of the population owns 60% of the wealth. I imagine that they're mostly the ones that are eating out and paying for private schools and buying all the services that you are talking about.
So what do you take from that? They've got enough money they can afford it? Judy doesn't think so.
That's what I'm wondering. If the interest rates go up, they have more disposable income, they can afford it. I went from making $140,000 down to $20,000 a year. Those interest rate costs are going to be passed on to businesses, and all of my costs will probably see that interest rate cost invoked in my hard purchases, such as food.
Right. So it may be hitting you there, but does it make a difference? Let's say, Ian Morris, for that 20% you were describing that's been getting decent wage raises, as you portray them, do they share equally in the pain of inflation if and when it comes, maybe already?
No, in a sense they don't, because the ones who are reliant on fixed income, where you are exposed to higher inflation, is the poor and pensioners who don't really have inflation-proof assets. whereas the rich tend to have stocks. And if there's rising inflation, it means corporations are raising their prices, which should be good for profits, which means that even though inflation is bad, the stock market earnings might go up in line with inflation. So in recent years, you've had a housing boom that has allowed the top end of town to really spend out of their housing wealth through a lot of cash outs from mortgage refinancing and home equity loans. And even though the top 20% of income earners earn the vast majority of income, they've actually been spending even more than their income, so that they're suffering from a negative personal saving ratio, that they're borrowing even more than they're earning to keep their spending up. And so I think if anything were to happen to the housing boom, and it looks like that is fading, and if we were to have a harsher correction, that may actually hurt the top end of town. And wealth, it drives a lot of that, housing wealth and stock wealth. But for the bottom 80%, it's really what's happening to real wages, and that has been under some pressure.
Alan Sinai, does it make a difference in the way the Fed fights inflation or the way we perceive it when we have greater inequality of wealth and income than, let's say, in the 70s? Does that factor in here somehow? Does it change
the
war plan?
It doesn't really in the current theory and practice of monetary policy, and it's a good question. Perhaps it should, but we had a session at Jackson Hole a couple mm-hmm. years ago on this, and the conclusion was it doesn't alter the approach to monetary policy. It would not alter the approach to monetary policy. So unfortunately, it's not on the table. Now, I do think there's quite a disproportionate impact on the lower income, middle income families of a combination of rising inflation and rising interest rates.
And you're talking about a huge chunk of the population.
Absolutely. It's a very straightforward thing. It's a question of the share of income. In other words, housing costs is a share of your income for a lower income family versus rich people or rich households, and energy costs is a share of income for lower income families much larger.
So the strategy for responding doesn't change, but the pain of
Absolutely.
That is shared differently and felt more heavily
on the lower income and lower wealth families of our country. And that is I hate to say it, but that's the way it is. It's an unfortunate consequence of the current situation
kind
and the situation going forward.
Baked in the cake here. And Ian Morris, what about interest rates? I mean, I can remember the first time I bought something in the real estate world. This was years ago now. I believe it was 17% interest, the mortgage that I first signed up for. No one's used to that anymore. Are we going to see a bump up like that anytime soon?
No, I don't think so. You know, mortgage rates for, say, a traditional 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is around 6.5%. It might go a bit higher towards 7%, but we're not going to go much higher than that. And part of it is that you actually don't need much higher interest rates today relative to the past, because people are taking on and have actually taken on a lot more debt than they have in the past.
So a little change pinches hard right away.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Ian Morris, Chief U.S. Economist at HSBC. Mr. Morris, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
We're joined right now from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, by Stuart Hoffman, Chief Economist at PNC Financial. Stuart Hoffman, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
New York Times quotes you as saying these inflation rates we're seeing already are rotten to the core. Is this the alarm bell?
Well, a little bit of alarm bell, but certainly not a three-alarm fire.
What do you mean by rotten to the core?
Well, I was a bit of a pun, because what the Fed watches is core inflation. Core inflation, as they define it, and you've talked about it already.
So this is economist humor that you're indulging in here.
A little bit of economist tongue-in-cheek humor, just to keep it going.
But what's the rotten part?
The rotten part is the 3 months in a row that core inflation was up 0.3%. That's a little too hot for the Fed's liking and most consumers. Three in a row means it's a little more than just a temporary aberration. As Ben Bernanke pointed out himself, he's looking at inflation, of course, going forward. Ultimately, everyone's eyes are looking forward. But inflation has a certain inertia to that, meaning once it starts to speed up, it's a little hard to slow it down. The other side is when it's slow, it stays slow, so you want to make sure it doesn't break out of the recent pattern. And 0.3 for 3 months, 2.4% up from a year ago, is just a little faster than the Fed would like and headed in the wrong direction.
So is the genie out of the bottle here? Is it going to take some pain to get it back under control already?
Not necessarily. I use the cat out of the bag analogy.
Oh,
rather.
Good. Horse out of the barn, genie, cat. We like the menagerie.
Genies grant wishes. Cats are more curious. So
tough to herd.
Whatever you want to call it. Right now, I wouldn't say the cat is out of the bag, but maybe it's poking out and there's a few whiskers. In all seriousness, inflation is a little bit uncomfortably high. Economic growth has clearly slowed down this spring. And so, you know, we've got a little bit of what we don't want. We don't want slower growth, but we have it. We don't want faster inflation, at least for now we do. Of course, the two of them together are exactly what you don't want. As I look into the second half of the year, that's why I'm not setting off alarm bells.
Mm-hmm.
I do think economic growth will remain at a fairly decent pace, not as fast as it was the last couple of years. And I do think this inflation sort of scare will pass. The Fed is on the job. They're the firemen that put out any kind of inflationary fire. And I think they've done that. And they're talking tough. And I think they're going to back up that tough talk with some action by raising the rate, as now everybody agrees, at the end of this month and probably one more time sometime later this summer. And with that up and oil prices a bit higher, but hopefully no higher than they are now, I think we'll get over this inflation scare, and the markets will feel a lot better that inflation remains under control, and the Fed has a lot of credibility, but maybe not until late in the summer or in the fall.
Wall Street's really been sweating here. The numbers are now basically flat for the year. Is this just a matter of getting to know Ben Bernanke, of figuring out a new conversation, or are there fundamentals that the Street's looking at, Stuart Hoffman?
A little bit of both. I think getting to know Ben Bernanke, just as it took the markets back in 1987, a little time to get to know Alan Greenspan. I actually think Bernanke's message has been fairly clear. I think he's been unfairly, you know, criticized for not being clear, not being transparent.
Yep.
I think he's been quite clear. It's just that the market doesn't like his message. His message is, and not just Bernanke, but other Fed chairmen, is that inflation has moved up. It's a bit higher than we thought it was going to be. And that means that we can't rest on our laurels, or we just can't stop raising interest rates as quickly as the market, either the stock or bond markets, would have liked. So I think Bernanke's message has been clear. Two points. One, we're not exactly sure what we're going to do because it's not as clear to us.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, we don't like the outlook for inflation, and so we are going to have to raise rates to get it. Very clear, but
not exactly welcome. Alan Sonne, what do you make of Wall Street's response here? I mean, there's been a lot of bear dancing lately.
You know, every expansion, we have what we call corrections on interest rate jitters. The points of time when the central bank starts to pay attention to inflation and lets everyone know that they're doing that. So this is just one of those.
This is it.
And so I don't think we have anything more than a good-sized correction. We don't have the beginning of an equity bear market, and we have some chance we'll get through this with only a mild escape on inflation. But we're not sure at this point, and, you know, these markets are very schizophrenic. They go up and down and all around, and initially the chairman was not clear on inflation. I think he hadn't come to his viewpoint on that.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw gold prices soar and commodity prices soar and the dollar sell off. And then 2 weeks ago today, he got very clear, and we saw the stock market continue to sell off,
right,
and those other prices go the other way. So I think we'll settle down, and we'll just watch inflation. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how wages go. Wage earners will catch up. The labor market is tight. It's happening as we speak, and profit margins probably will go down.
But some pain on the way, and not to be exactly equally shared, Alan Sinai says. Bruce is calling from Reston, Virginia. Hi, Bruce. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Bruce. What's on your mind?
Well, I was driving down the highway and listening to these guys and thinking to myself, have they walked into a grocery store lately? I'm part of what I would call the middle class. You guys would probably call me part of that upper 20%. I'm a little over $150,000 a year.
Okay.
But I will tell you, 25 years ago, I made $55,000 a year,
yeah,
and I had a hell of a lot more money. I don't think these economists or the government understand what they've done to the middle class. It is gone, for all intents and purposes.
And you're way above the median income there, Bruce. I mean, yeah, you know, you should be doing well.
We have become a have-not society, in my opinion. And frankly, if you're not in the upper 1% in this economy, you're a have-not or close to it. I drive a 10-year-old vehicle. I have two kids in college that I pay for cash. And I've been on a cash economy for the last 5 years because the credit bubble scares me to death.
And I can just see the hole in the sole of your shoe with two kids in college and all the rest. Bruce, let us pick that up. Alan Sinai, how about it?
Bruce,
here's Mr. 150,000, and he's not feeling good at all.
I hear Bruce loud and clear. Bruce, I'm an economist, but you didn't hear my response to the lady Judy who called before, perhaps. She was right on, and you are right on. So don't think that all economists don't understand what's going on out there. And I do actually shop once in a while instead of my wife. And if I don't, my wife tells me what's going on in the grocery store. So I know what's going on in the grocery store and gasoline prices and restaurant prices all around the horn. And unfortunately, when that happens, the Federal Reserve raises interest rates. We cut back spending and inflation goes down and we get more comfortable with inflation. And there is pain as part of that process.
But you just said you thought wages would come up somewhat here. So what about, Bruce says, hey, the middle class is getting croaked. If in the inflation fight, do things get better or worse for the middle class, such as it is?
Well, at a particular point in time, wages do begin to go up. And we do see wage compensation, all forms of them, going up on a year-over-year basis. And that's just part of the inflation process. But when you get a combination of rising inflation and rising interest rates, the squeeze of that, and of course rising oil and energy costs, it's like a triple whammy.
Yeah, a vice from all sides.
It's a vice, and all that we can expect from what I'm talking about, rising compensation because of tight labor markets, workers will have to ask for more, and some of them will get more. All we end up getting is an offset, but not in this situation.
No relief.
No full relief, no. Mm.
Matt's calling from Windham, Maine. Matt, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We're good.
Well, I thought I'd throw my 2 cents worth in. I'm very nervous as a consumer and an investor up in the northeast part of the country.
Yeah.
I can tell you that within a few miles of my home, there must be 30 homes for sale.
Yeah, I've seen those signs mushrooming all over the place lately, yeah.
It's crazy, and I know that a lot of folks are in over their heads, and they felt very comfortable, and they got in very deep. I've always tried to be pretty careful myself, and I carry a very small mortgage on my home. But even as careful as I am, I do have an equity line that's been at such a comfortable rate that I didn't sweat it. But
right.
Now that's going to become variable. You know, we talk about the corrections. You know, at what point do folks get in so much over their head that they have to get out of it?
One way or another, and that could hurt. Matt, let's look at it. Stuart Hoffman, here's Matt. He's got a home equity line, and it's been pretty comfortable for him. Given what the Fed may have to do to tamp down this inflation, what's going to happen to people like that, who have tapped into what was the rising value of their homes? How vulnerable are they if we're in an inflation fight here?
Well, actually, Matt sounds like he's taken fairly good precaution, and if he has a variable rate home equity line, obviously that has come up, but he doesn't sound like he has a big balance. As somebody who recently bought a home and has one for sale, and the market is pretty slow here in Pittsburgh as well, it's sort of like about a month ago, somebody put a clamp on it, and it's part of the mentality, part of the rates. I just don't see the housing market collapsing. I do think there are going to be a lot more homes on the market longer, and people, if they do want to sell them, are going to have to probably adjust down, as I may have to, their expectations about what the house is worth or they thought it was worth now. If they just bought it a year ago, they could be in somewhat trouble. If you bought your house 5 years ago in most parts of the country, and Pittsburgh's probably house prices are going up about as slowly as just about any place, you know, you're just not making as much money as you thought you might have. It's not like you're losing your money on your house.
But that equity line sticks with you, and if it's asking more from you in terms of interest payments, that's a pinch, isn't it?
That is a pinch. That there's no question. But when people take out adjustable rate mortgages, I mean, it's not like they didn't do it with their eyes open. When
yep.
you take out a mortgage rate and you're willing to let it adjust and it adjusts down, you're a winner and everyone's happy. If it adjusts up, it goes the other way. What I don't think is you're going to see a wholesale default on people on their home equity loans or on their mortgages, but a lot of hot properties, condominiums, some second homes. Some areas in other coastal parts of the country are likely to see people who just bought their houses, and especially if they did it interest only on an adjustable rate,
yep.
they are the most vulnerable. But I just can't get a, unless interest rates go up a lot more, mortgage rates go to 7.5% or 8% rather than 6.5% or 6.75%, I just don't see where the housing market is going to be the proverbial roof that caves in on the consumer and therefore on the economy, not to say there won't be individuals who went too far and they'll get a little lesson the hard way, and I'm not wishing that on them,
but there it is.
Take risks in life, and if you overdid yourself on a house and a mortgage and you did it all variable, you're going to learn the downside. Speaking from the banking industry, I don't get the sense, and we certainly don't see any big rise in foreclosures or delinquencies as of yet in our mortgage portfolio.
Stuart Hoffman, Chief Economist at PNC Financial, it's been great to have you from Pittsburgh. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, and glad to be on with my good friend Alan Sina.
Stuart, I like the run to the core. That's a wonderful one. We'll talk about that next time I see you in Aspen.
Okay, very good. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Well, economist comedy. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. John is calling from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Hi, John. You're on the air. John, are you there, my friend? Let's get another John from San Diego, California. San Diego, John, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, what do you know?
Hi, I got a question. For some of the new graduates going to be graduating either this year or next year, what is the forecast in terms of inflation? Because the people who have taken out loans, it's going to be going up into higher interest rates and things like that. And so I'm quite unsure what's going to be the forecast for some of the newer graduates there who have taken these high interest rate loans as well as private loans as well.
Right, and we know that the government's pushing up its interest rates on these student loans.
Yeah, Alan, that's right.
Let's put
the,
it
the market agenda. Interest rates a year from now. Sorry to be this approximate, probably up 1 to 2 percentage points. The job prospects for graduates, though you didn't say whether you're an MBA or undergraduate or what, job prospects, we had a terrific year for graduates this
Just
year.
Now,
the labor market's tight. The labor market's tight.
Good for graduates.
And that's
then.
Good for graduates. It's probably good for another year.
What about mortgage rates? Stuart Hoffman was saying he doesn't see 7 or 8% mortgage rates coming. How do you look at it, Alan?
I think we'll be in the sevens.
You do think so?
Yeah, we're thinking the Federal Reserve will go 3 more times before the end of the year and might have to go a little more next year. So that's mortgage rates a half to three quarters of a percentage point higher, which would get us in the sevens. Again, that's not the end of the world. That is consistent with a economy that next year might grow 2.5% or a little less.
John's looking at it from the just getting started end of things. Look at it from the approaching retirement side for a moment. Higher interest rates, inflation fear, how does that affect retirees?
Actually, there's a big plus because cash and equivalent returns, money market funds, treasury bills, talking 5 to 6%, that's the highest return, safe returns on cash and equivalent for a retired population that we've seen in probably 7 or 8 years.
Of course, the after inflation is the calculation you've got to do there as well. What about—
Well, remember, the retired people are very good at shifting their market basket and finding bargains. So the stated inflation rate is not the same for everybody, the average inflation rate. My sense
they've
is—
They've got time to shop and they do it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And what about this issue of the federal debt and whether the U.S. government will be tempted to inflate its way out, make each of those dollars worth less so it's not so painful to pay off? Is that a real option for this government?
Well, it's already going on. Look, you know, I don't think any agent in the economy, the government or politicians or the President of the United States looks at it quite that way. But if you look at the and by the way, I was completely for the tax cuts. I think President Bush is right. Without those, we wouldn't be having the economy we're having
growth
today.
Growth has got going on.
But between government spending, for various reasons, and the aging population, the drain on the budget, and the tax cuts, with inflation is going up, the debt is being taken care of through rising inflation. The system does it, even though nobody on purpose does it.
Nobody flips a switch, but it's
No, but at the end of the day, that's what happens in almost every country, with rare exceptions. Inflation, when you have a big potential existing debt problem, it's part of the system. It ends up that way. And it's already in process. We hope that it doesn't get out of hand, but it is already in process.
And some pain on the way.
By the way, that gets reflected in the currency, the dollar. Mm-hmm. And the dollar has, on average, gone down some. And because global investors spot this, and then they're less likely to be in the currency of a country where this process is going on and it can be a long-term thing, It's political and it's economic, and that is very much centered in the currency.
All right, as long as they don't go flocking out the doors away from that dollar.
We hope not.
We hope not. Alan Sinai, Chief Global Economist and Strategist at Decision Economics. Alan, it's always great talking with you. Not exactly pie in the sky at all. We feel you with your feet on the earth. Thanks
Depends
for being
Depends on
with
the
us.
Cycle, Tom. Last okay. time, I okay. think it was pie in the sky.
Okay. That's our mantra for today. Depends on the cycle, but pinching a little right now. Alan Sinai, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.